From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. First daughter Ivanka Trump made a bit of history when she got her father to become the first Republican president to call for paid family leave for American workers. On Tuesday, Washington State became the fifth state to guarantee that right. A conservative and a liberal think tank recently forged a bipartisan plan of their own. So it's almost as if it's beginning to look like an idea whose time has come. This hour on Point, the push for paid family leave. You can join us on air or online. Do you have paid leave to care for a new baby or a sick family member in your state? Is this something we all deserve, just like citizens in other developed economies? Can we afford it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And to get us started this hour, I'm joined from Seattle by Joe Fain. He's a Republican state senator for Washington. He was the prime sponsor of a bill that was signed into law just this week guaranteeing paid family leave. Senator Fain, thanks for joining us. It's a great honor to have you.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
So as we mentioned, you're the prime sponsor. I understand that this bill will guarantee up to 12 weeks of paid leave after the birth or placement of a child or to care for a family member with a serious health condition. Why do you support this?
Well, beyond the fact that the time has come and that with over 180 countries that have similar plans, that it just made sense for our community and our state here in Washington to come up with it. For me, it was a lot more personal. My son was born 14 months ago. My wife had extraordinarily generous paid leave program. I was on intercession in between our legislative sessions, so I was able to spend time at home, and it just really crystallizes in your mind the fact that there are a lot of families that don't have access to this and are having to choose between being able to pay rent or cover medical expenses or being able to spend time with their family. And in my mind, that just doesn't seem fair.
So let's listen to your governor. Here's Washington State's Democratic Governor Jay Inslee just a couple of days ago getting ready to sign the new bill into law.
There is a reason the sun is shining out today. It's because this is the historic day when, with my signature, Washington State will have the best paid family leave policy in the United States of America.
So there's Governor Jay Inslee of Washington, and we're talking to State Senator Joe Fain, the sponsor of that bill that the governor has signed into law. Has he signed it into law, Senator?
He did. He signed it into law about 5 minutes after he gave those remarks.
Okay, terrific. How's it going to be paid for?
Well, it uses a payroll premium tax, and so it's just for a minimum wage worker, for example, it would be about 2 pennies per hour that a minimum wage worker would be paying into this program, and a little over 1 penny per hour that employee's employer would be paying into the program. And again, that's only if the employer is of a size of 50 employees or more. One of the things that we really tried to do in this plan was to respect the fact that this can be a real burden on businesses of all sizes, but particularly small businesses. And so businesses under 50 do not have to pay premiums into the program at all.
Now, as you know, I don't need to tell you, there was pushback on that. So here is Patrick O'Connor with the National Federation of Independent Businesses telling Seattle station Q13 Fox that both workers and employers have reason to dislike this new law.
I think there's going to be a whole lot of Washington workers who are going to be very surprised to find out that the state government now is going to be taking money out of their paycheck to pay for an insurance program that they and their families may not be interested in using.
The National Federation of Independent Business says they're hearing from concerned businesses.
They're concerned also about the costs and consequences of having to comply with this new mandate.
So, Senator Fain, respond to that concern, which I know you must have heard a lot of as you folks were debating this.
Well, I did, but one of the things that's great about what we were able to do in Washington is we had really strong both bipartisan support as well as strong support by business. The Association of Washington Business was at the table the entire time. They were supportive of the end compromise. And so it's not unreasonable that there will be folks out there that would be concerned about costs, concerned about the impact on the economy. I'm a free market guy. That is something that is certainly worth discussing. But at the end of the day, I think it comes down to whether we think that folks, particularly at the lower rungs of the income ladder, should be able to have access to paid leave programs that allow them to spend time with their families at these important moments in their life, like the birth of a child, or in worst-case scenario is someone in their family is facing an illness. And we know from the statistics that if you are upper middle class or upper class, you have those programs. You're working for employers that provide that because they need to. If you are at the bottom rung of the income ladder, you don't have those programs, and there's no hope for that kind of access.
Yeah.
And it just seems like it's important to make that come true for folks.
Senator, you've spoken very eloquently about why this is the right thing to do, but you also described yourself as a free market guy. Is this the right thing to do for the economy as well? I mean, does this make economic sense, I guess I'm asking?
Well, I think one of the reasons that the businesses came in and supported this bill in the end is because there are a number of different ways that you can put a paid family leave program into place. And one of the ways that I think a lot of businesses were really fearing is that type of program where you say, hey, Company X, you're in charge. You have to cover it. You have to provide X number of weeks. You have to pay for it all by yourself. And different businesses with different margins are in wildly different situations in terms of being able to afford something like that. And so there are times when we look at situations like unemployment insurance or workers' compensation insurance, there are times where it's in businesses' best interest to have a broad pool to pull from and to make those costs affordable for both individuals and for businesses. And that's what we were able to do with this bill.
So I'm reading that the Washington Senate is pretty evenly split between Republicans and Democrats. Correct me if I'm wrong. 24 Republicans, 25 Democrats. This passed 37-12. So lots of folks crossing over and obviously working together. What's the secret sauce out there? The secret bipartisan sauce that made this possible?
Well, I'm really excited that a majority of my Republican colleagues in the Senate did end up supporting this bill at the end. And obviously, this is a difficult thing to ask of folks, and I really respect those on both sides of the aisle that that thought long and hard about this issue. But I really think the secret to this was the process. It was a great process. We sat in a room for, you know, over 3 months, representatives from Working Families Coalition, from the Association of Washington Business, from large businesses, from small businesses, restaurants, et cetera, and we listened to one another and tried to take into account what the real needs were if we were going to make something like this happen. And it was an open process. Folks were involved, and folks got to provide their input throughout the entire process. And at the end of the day, I think most of the needs that people had while walking into the room were met when they were walking out. And that's why we were able to get such strong bipartisan support.
Joe Fain, one more question before I let you go. We're going to be talking for the rest of the hour, or for a lot of the rest of the hour, about efforts to pass a federal Family Paid Leave Act. What's the best case from your point of view for that?
Well, I look at the model that we've set here in Washington, and I don't have a lot of hopes for federal action on big issues like this. Sometimes I think a lot of us are getting a little bit frustrated that the federal government hasn't been able to move forward on a host of issues that are important to people. But I do think state governments are starting to step up. Washington, obviously, the fifth state to do this, but Washington is the first state that did not already have what's called a temporary disability insurance program in place. So really, Washington can be the model for all of those other states that don't have those TDI programs to actually do this for themselves and to create this program for workers at all levels.
That's Joe Fain, Republican state senator from Washington State. He was the prime sponsor of a bill that was signed into law this week guaranteeing paid family leave for Washington citizens of Washington. The law takes effect in the year 2020. Senator Fain, thanks for joining us. We're really very grateful.
Thanks, Anthony.
And joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Danielle Paquette. She's an economic policy reporter for The Washington Post. She's been covering this issue nationally for a long time and has a story out today on Ivanka Trump's plan for paid family leave and the pushback it's getting from all sides. Danielle, good to have you back on point.
Hey, Anthony.
So respond. We just were listening to Senator Fain there. Put this in some perspective for us. It's the fifth state to do it. How significant is what happened in Washington State, in your view, as someone who covers this?
Well, we started seeing momentum from states back in 2002 when California first passed its paid leave measure. And so far, New York has followed. D.C. has a measure taking effect in 2020. We have Rhode Island, New Jersey. You know, this is only five states, so it's been a pretty slow a slow progress, but Ivanka Trump is leading conversations on Capitol Hill trying to get the federal government to step up and provide this benefit that, as you guys know, we don't have. The United States doesn't guarantee a single day of paid leave to new parents.
And I want to talk about Ivanka Trump's ideas and other ideas as well on the federal level. But first, why is that? I mean, as someone who is... covered this and studied this. Why is the U.S. the only industrial economy without a federal paid leave policy like this?
There's just been this long battle in Washington. We have Republicans who view a benefit like this as just a new entitlement, something that'll become really expensive and hard to sustain, while Democrats are saying, hey, the poorest among us are the least likely to have any money when a new child arrives, and that's tough. So we've had arguments and arguments with Democrats proposing measures that are much more generous. We have Kirsten Gillibrand, for example, proposing 12 weeks at two-thirds wages for everyone in the country who doesn't have access to that benefit. And in the past, Republicans just didn't really have a plan like this at all. They argued that a stronger economy would better support families, and the free market should handle it. So now we have a White House, the first Republican president to add a paid leave plan in his budget. This is an effort championed by Ivanka Trump, and she is proposing 6 weeks of paid time off for new parents to be funded through the nation's unemployment insurance system.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about paid family leave, an idea that seems to be gaining traction in this country, the only developed economy without it. You can join the conversation. Are you in favor of it? If so, how do we pay for it? Are you surprised that a Republican president is pushing for some version of it? My guest is Danielle Paquette, economic policy reporter for The Washington Post. And Danielle, I want to get into some of the nitty-gritty about President Trump's plan as advocated by his daughter, Ivanka. So 6 weeks paid leave for families after the birth and adoption of a child. I'm reading that it would cost about $25 billion over 10 years, paid for by reforms in the unemployment insurance program. Can you explain what that means? Where does the money actually come from?
That's a great question. There's actually a lot of debate over the answer. So during the campaign, Donald Trump proposed funding a program like this by quashing fraud in the nation's unemployment insurance system. And that, of course, set off tons of conversations because lawmakers have been trying for a really long time to get rid of fraud, you know, improper payments that might go to people who haven't been laid off or people who have deceased. And so paying for such an expensive program with funds that are not already secured will be difficult, lawmakers on the left are saying, and economists of the right are on the right are noting. So the White House has also said that, hey, maybe we can use money from budget cuts elsewhere in the president's proposed budget. And it's really too early to tell. They don't have a very concrete plan on the funding yet.
All right. So it's lacking some specifics on the funding. But you mentioned it's being greeted less than with less than wholehearted enthusiasm by both folks on the left and the right.
Well, they're in a really tough position because Ivanka Trump is proposing a plan that lands right in the middle of what people want. Lawmakers on the left want much more. They want a full 12 weeks. They want more money to land in the bank accounts of people who really need it when that baby comes. But people on the right would much rather see a national program not be created. They are advocating for tax breaks instead, or maybe tax-free savings accounts. So we have liberals saying this is not going far enough. We are not going to endorse this. And we have conservatives saying, hey, I don't want to get behind creating a new entitlement, a new government program.
Let's go to Stephen, who's calling from Boston. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hello, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I work for a major power supplier here in the Boston area. It's a national company. We have FMLA, which is the Family Medical Leave Act. And it's basically designed when you can premeditate when a family member is going to have elective surgery, let's say. If something else happens, the amount of hoops you have to jump through just to use unpaid leave is really daunting. My father passed away a couple of years ago. He was dying of cancer. I went to the company, told them I was going to need to take some time off to care for him in his last days. By the time I got approval, I was actually on my way home from my last day of work, and he passed away.
Oh, Stephen, I'm sorry. That's a terrible story. I'm very sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and that's unpaid leave. And the idea is the company doesn't want you to take unpaid leave because then they have to pay somebody overtime to cover your position.
Yeah.
So it's already detrimental to the company for you not to be there. And I can't really see my company, you know, offering to pay you to stay home. The other question I had was, how are they going to stop abuse and fraud? Where do they draw the line? Where can I take, you know, if my child is sick home from school due to a sore throat, can I take unpaid family leave? I mean, paid family leave for that day. I don't understand how that's going to work.
We're going to get into some of the nitty-gritty about questions like that a little later, Stephen, but I appreciate the issue that you raised about what the current federal policy provides and doesn't provide. I want to take one more call before we get back to our experts. Casey is calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Casey, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm a mother of two, and I'm also a lactation counselor, and part of my support behind any sort of increase in paid family leave by state or federal is I see moms regularly who stress out.
Casey, I'm sorry. Your line is really fizzling out on us, so we're going to have to move on. I apologize. Call back, and we'll see if we can establish a better connection with you. But let's move on and go to Eric, who's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Eric, you're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks. So I had a experience working for a company that had paid leave, and you know, I first of all don't know if I have a for or against this, but this is just a experience I had that was a negative. And all the girls that worked in my area basically, you know, took advantage of this, rightfully so. It's a benefit that was to them, but the work fell onto everybody else. It's not like the company hired people to replace them temporarily or anything. So as somebody who doesn't have a family and not planning on it, I felt like it was a benefit that was a burden to me. And I understand that families are important to people, and it's something to pursue, but there's things I'd like to do. I mean, I couldn't just take weeks off to travel because it's important to me. So I don't know. I think there's some negatives to it too that need to be addressed.
All right. We're going to take that up as well. Eric, thanks for that call. I appreciate it. Let me introduce Aparna Mathur. She's a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. She co-led a joint working group on paid family leave with the Brookings Institution, which produced a kind of liberal conservative compromise. Their report is entitled Paid Family and Medical Leave, an Issue Whose Time Has Come. And Aparna Mathur, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Anthony.
So I'd love to hear what you came up with. Tell us about this bipartisan proposal. What would it offer?
Right. So we put together a group of experts. You know, you can see from your callers that there's a divide between people who think there are huge benefits to having this policy and others who think there are costs to having this policy. And so we said, well, let's get people who can look at both sides of the issue and look at the benefits and the costs and say what kind of federal policy would we design once we knew, you know, what the costs looked like and what the benefits looked like. So our AEI Brookings joint report, which included people from other organizations as well, we talked about a compromise plan that offers about 8 weeks of paid leave at about a 70% wage replacement rate. And we said that, you know, we don't want the policy to be hugely costly, so we have the benefits very targeted towards lower-income workers. The benefits are capped at about $600 per week. We offer job protection, which is also not common at the state level for paid leave policies, and I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are unable to take advantage of the paid leave programs, for instance, in California. And we said, you know, we recognize that there are costs to these policies for businesses and for, you know, and could have impacts on hiring. So the way we propose to fund the policy is through a payroll tax, but the payroll tax would be on workers. It wouldn't be on the business. It wouldn't be on, you know, anybody else. It would be on the workers. We think of this as an earned benefit that employees are essentially paying into. And then when they need the leave, they're able to take advantage of it. At the same time, in order to keep the costs down, we said that we would look for spending cuts elsewhere in the budget, provided they are not spending cuts that are directed at lower income households. So that's essentially our plan. I think it offers a good compromise for liberals and conservatives. And we're excited to sort of hear comments on it.
You know, I want to ask you, as you've been listening to my conversation with Danielle Paquette about Ivanka Trump's proposal and what the president is offering or wants to propose, although it has to be said that the sort of exactly how it's going to be paid for is still being worked out. But that basic approach, what's your response to that? Is that something, is that at least a point of departure, I guess?
That's right. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at the way the White House proposal would work, essentially, it would be funded as a state program. So it would operate through state unemployment insurance systems. And now these state unemployment insurance systems vary not just in, the amount of benefits across states. It's not exactly the same amount that every employee would get. Also, eligibility rules vary a lot. So who is eligible for the benefit would vary in New York versus California. So that would be leave some uncertainty about, you know, would all new parents actually get the benefit? Also, I think my biggest worry with doing it at the state level and especially through state UI programs is that those are typically funded through employer payroll taxes. And so if we're essentially putting a cost on businesses and saying, you know, this is a new benefit for the employee, but now there's an employer cost to providing the benefit. And so, you know, that worries me a lot. And that's why the way we structured it as an employee payroll tax.
Let's go to Rachel, who's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Rachel. You're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I have two children, and while my employer's leave plans changed during the time between having my children, the reality is that the majority of leave is unpaid, and the portion of leave that is paid is through short-term disability. So already there's I take issue with the fact that that type of leave is considered a disability. It's a really critical time in a family's life. You're growing your family, and the stress of finances and figuring out how you're going to pay for not only these added healthcare costs and the added member to your family, but also saving for that time you have away from work and then paying for childcare when you return to work. And the reality is that most families in this country, you have one or both parents returning to work far too soon when you compare the United States to other developed countries. And it's really inexcusable. And I try to advocate for this in my workplace, even though I'm beyond the point of being able to utilize a better leave policy. I probably will not have any more children. But my family, I have a lot of family in Canada, and they were aghast learning when we would be sending our children to daycare, when we would be returning to work, because the reality is support for new families is much greater in Canada and other developed countries.
Right. Rachel, thanks so much for that call and for relating your experience. Aparna Mathur, listening to Rachel there, I gather that's a pretty typical set of concerns coming from new parents, right?
That's exactly right. And that is really the reason why we need such policies today. I mean, most households in America have both parents in the labor market. Mm. And this is no longer a situation where, you know, one spouse is staying home and the other is out earning, a wage. It's both parents working. And so you really need to have policies that allow that work-family balance to continue. And we see this in the U.S. Today, you know, according to data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, we find that when you look at all workers, only about 14% of all workers have access to any type of paid leave.
14%.
Only 14% have access to paid leave. Now there are states that offer short-term disability, as Rachel pointed out, and we hear this all the time. You know, why is my pregnancy being treated like a disability? But that's how originally the states decided to fund these programs, because they realized that, you know, working women especially need to take time off at the time of birth of a child. And so this is a huge concern. And especially when you look at low wage workers, I mean, the situation there is that people are returning to work sometimes within a week of having a child, and in extreme cases, within 3 days of having a baby. So this is an issue, I think, that affects all working families. This is, you know, a worse situation for the lowest income workers, but it's equally bad, I think, for many middle income workers who don't have access to any of these policies in the workplace.
I'm really struck by that figure, 14% of workers, only 14% of workers have access to paid leave. Another statistic from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 71% of women with children under 18 are in the labor force.
That's right.
And 61% of married families with children, both parents work. So we're talking about a huge population, and only a very small percentage of that population is getting this kind of support.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Jennifer. She's calling from Augusta, Georgia. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Okay, hi. Thank you very much for having me. I was hired as the first medical neuromuscular massage therapist in the federal government at Eisenhower Army Hospital in 2012, and I never thought that I was going to be hit with two terminally ill parents in a matter of years. And so a year ago, I got hit with the news that my dad got Sézary syndrome, T-cell cutaneous lymphoma from plutonium exposure at Savannah Riverside. And my mom got dementia. And I don't mean to break up about this. It's just very hard because they got both hit at the same time.
Yep.
And so I begged and pleaded with what I could do and used up all my leave. And then I had to get the FMLA, which secured my job, but I wasn't getting paid.
Right. That's the Federal Medical Leave Act, which essentially right. allows you to take unpaid leave and have your job guaranteed for your return. Mm-hmm. But obviously it doesn't pay you.
Exactly. And yeah. because I wasn't making any money, I had no choice. I had to, because I had to have certain hours so I could be there for my parents, I had to resign, and I had to get a hardship permit to work from home to be able to make any kind of an income as a service-connected vet, you know, prior to getting ratings, but still help with taking care of my parents that are terminally ill. So I would have gladly paid another extra penny or two out of my paycheck to pay into a program like this.
Understandably.
Because we waste money. Yeah. I mean, we waste money every day on whether you go out to drink, whether you get your hair, your skin, your nails done, whether you are getting apps paid for on your phone to play games. It's ridiculous.
Jennifer, I'm really grateful that you shared your story. I'm sorry. It sounds like quite a load you're carrying there. So thanks for sharing that story. And I wish you all kinds of good luck. Listeners, we're talking about all of us, really, and our working lives. And when we have a newborn child, a sick spouse, or as we just heard from Jennifer, an aging or sick parent, maybe two, and whether we should be able to earn a salary while we take care of our family. I'm Anthony Brooks in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about the new push for paid family leave. You can join the conversation. Do you like what you're hearing? Is the president's plan enough? Does the bipartisan plan we've been talking about sound like a way to go forward? My guests this hour are Aparna Mathur of the American Enterprise Institute. She co-led a study on paid family leave that called it an idea whose time has come. I'm also joined by Danielle Paquette, economic policy reporter for The Washington Post. I'd like to jump right into a couple of phone calls. Neil is calling from Grosse Pointe, Michigan. Hi, Neil. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you? Great to be with you. I am on my very last paid day of paternity leave. My organization, a national progressive political organization, is fortunate enough to give all staffers access to 12 weeks of paid leave, which, as a man and a new father, I can't tell you how important it has been to have this time with my new baby daughter to bond and feel comfortable in the role of a parent. But even more so, I know that my taking this leave is essential to ensuring that women in my organization feel comfortable taking leave, because if men don't do it, women don't do it as well. And so what has been kind of disturbing, and I don't know where it stands in the current, you know, political process going on in the Trump administration, is, you know, you heard very early on about the Trump's plan didn't actually provide for paternity leave. Instead, just you know, kind of equating taking care of children or taking care of sick parents or taking care of a sick family member to women's work. And that's just not acceptable. And frankly, we need to look to paid family leave as not just a way to help families survive and get through good times and difficult times, but also a way to make our country more equitable between the sexes.
Neil, thanks so much for the call, and congratulations on your new daughter, by the way, and good luck going back to work. I really appreciate your calling in. Danielle Paquette, Neil raises a couple of good issues that I want to ask you about. When folks are talking about a paid family leave, I mean, whether it's Ivanka Trump or at the state level, how frequently are dads included in that calculus?
He's right. The initial plan from the administration, well, before they were the administration, Donald Trump proposed paid maternity leave a couple months before the election. And we had a lot of people angry about that in the country because, like he pointed out, if you offer the benefit just to women, you might increase the risk of employer discrimination against women, or you might be sending the message that raising a child is solely women's work. So the second iteration of the plan from Ivanka in the White House extends to both men and women and adoptive parents. And they did that in order, Ivanka, I believe, said in the Wall Street Journal, to lower the risk of heightened discrimination among young working women.
And Aparna Mathur, does your plan that sort of represents a kind of conservative liberal compromise, does it take into account dads as well?
Absolutely. And I just wanted to say that was an excellent call because we need more dads to be making these choices. As part of our plan, we absolutely made it gender neutral. We believe that, you know, dads should have access to the same weeks of leave as the mother. They can both choose how many, you know, when, who needs to take the leave and when, and split it up or take it at the same time. But I think allowing fathers to take leave at the time of birth and encouraging them to take that leave, I think, is critical. You know, as Danielle pointed out, one, because we believe that if you don't do that and if you make this a women's issue, we are likely to see employers discriminating more against women because this is a leave policy that only applies to women. And secondly, I think we need gender neutrality in childcare. We don't want the moms to feel like they are the sole you know, caretakers of children or for other types of caregiving. And we need dads to be and fathers to be equally involved in that process. And you know, dads around the country are speaking up on this issue. So I think it's absolutely critical to make this gender neutral.
Aparna and Danielle, stand by. I want to introduce Katie Bethel. She joins us from San Francisco, and she's founder and executive director of the organization PLUS, which stands for Paid Leave for the United States, which gets funding from MoveOn.org, among other organizations. And Katie, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
You've been listening to this conversation. Let me ask you first, are you encouraged by what's happening in states like Washington, where we started this hour, where the governor signed into law a paid family leave act?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially encouraged by leadership by senators like Joe Fain, who took a position on this from the conservative side. I mean, just to step back for a minute, what we're talking about here is a caregiving crisis in America. And Jennifer and Steve, the callers earlier, highlight something that's really important, which is that today, 75% of people who take family leave are taking it in order to care for family members. They're not taking it for parental leave. On the parental leave side, one in four women in America today return to work within 2 weeks of giving birth. Mm. And those we've done research about who are the women who are returning to work so quickly, and it's largely women who are more vulnerable populations, low-income workers, part-time workers. So when I look at a proposal like that that has come out of that Aparna led, I see that as such an important step in solving one critical problem, which is the political problem. To the public, this issue isn't partisan. It has a supermajority of support from the public. Republicans and Democrats have families that they love and want to take care of. What we need to talk about is how we solve the caregiving crisis. So if we want to affect infant mortality and child health, we need to look at more like 6 to 12 months of parental leave. If we want to address equality, like the caller Neil mentioned.
Wait, but just stop there. 6 to 12 months of paid leave?
Absolutely. Yep. And if you look like at programs in countries like the UK and Canada, both of those programs are a full 12 months or more of leave that parents can split between them or can be used by a single parent. And that's focused on infant and child health. Pediatricians in the United States know that infants need at least 6 months with their parents to get the kind of bonding, healthy start that they need.
What do you think of that, Aparna Mathur? I mean, that sounds like a stretch. I know your plan that you hammered out as a kind of compromise plan is a long way from that.
That's right. I mean, we did have people in our working group who made the point that Kate made, which is that for children's health, you need parents home to be for the first 6 months. Now, we do recognize that at the same time, there would be costs to businesses, telling them that you need to keep a job open for 6 months for any employee that needs to take that time off. And it's a paid leave benefit. We recognize that there are huge costs to that, too. So I think our compromise was that we first of all, since the plan is already gender neutral, we are allowing both parents about 8 weeks. And so that gets you to 16 weeks, if they took it at different points of time. And that's probably the best we can hope for, I think, in the U.S. at this point, given that we're starting from zero.
Yeah.
I do get the point that for health reasons, you would want longer periods of leave, but I worry about other economic outcomes, hiring of women and other kinds of discrimination arising from really long periods of leave.
So, Katie, I want to ask you as well the significance of the fact that we have a Republican president who is talking about this issue. Now, I based on what you would advocate for, I'm sure you feel that his plan doesn't go far enough. But does it encourage you that at least there it is on the national agenda and being talked about in the White House?
Well, of course it does. The attention that paid family leave is receiving in the national political sphere is very important and long overdue. Right now, America has one of the highest infant mortality rates of any developed nation, and paid family leave is a proven way to affect that. We also have stagnant participation in the workforce by women, and putting paid family leave in place up to 26 weeks are the studies that we've seen on this issue actually encourages women's participation in the workforce and grows the economy. So I think that Republicans are starting to see that what many of the countries who already have this policy in place know, and that's that it's essentially an economic growth policy that improves people's participation in the workforce and grows our GDP.
Let's go to Christina, who is calling from Boston. Christina, you're on the air.
Hi, Anthony. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a nurse practitioner at one of the big acute hospitals in Boston, and I just wanted to chime in and maybe give a little perspective from, the health care provider side, in the sense that it's imperative, of course, for families to be allotted some leave and to spend time with their loved ones when they're ill and help care for them. However, beyond the direct cost, and your panelists have spoken about, payroll tax to the employee as opposed to the employer, there are other costs that are very important and need to be very clearly thought about and addressed, primarily in the sense, as the provider, there are weeks that I spend hours filling out leave paperwork for patients. That's hours of my time that my employer then has to compensate me for, not to mention my administrative assistant who is faxing forms back and forth and my office notes and so forth. So there are many layers to this that I think need to be very clearly thought about, and it would be nice to hear them addressed in what some of the different facets that will be put in place to help cover some of these costs to the employer.
Christina, thanks so much for the call. Aparna Mathur, what do you hear in Christina's call there? Because clearly, she's raising some concerns there that are based on personal experience.
That's right. And, one of your earlier callers made the same point that, how do employers react when an employee needs to take time off and tries to fill in the shift through other employees? And we do hear that concern from businesses. It does seem to be the case that at the state level, the states that are offering these policies, like California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, the business side, when you survey businesses, there doesn't seem to be a lot of concern about or they don't seem to be the huge cost that we often worry about. Now, I'm sure that means that, you know, some employee is filling in for another when they're out, and you probably reciprocate that when you need the leave. I think the idea to understand here is that this is a social insurance policy. This is telling you, you know, other people are ready to fill in when you need the leave. And so opening up the leave for, you know, other types of sort of leave taking, which is not just parents, but if you need to take leave for own illness, if you need to take leave for caregiving for your parents and other family members, I think it's important to realize that we're all sharing that responsibility in some to a large extent. And so, yes, there is some discomfort, but at the same time, you might need that leave, and you would want other employees to be filling in for you when you need to take it.
Katie Bethel, in the absence of a federal plan, which may or may not go through, the burden falls to individual states and to individual companies. And that's what I want to ask you about. What companies are doing this right? Or what's an example of a company that does this right? What are they offering?
So companies in the financial sector right now are really leading the way in terms of large employers on paid family leave. Deloitte, Bank of America, Ernst & Young all offer 16 weeks of fully paid parental leave for moms, dads, and adoptive parents. I also want to highlight Microsoft, who just a few weeks ago announced 4 weeks of family caregiving leave. So they're really on the cutting edge of offering a leave that addresses those 75% of people who are taking leave for non-parental leave reasons. And finally, when you look to the retail sector, IKEA really stands out as a company that's offering a benefit of 16 weeks that's available equally to all of their employees. We've done a study of all of the largest employers in the United States, the top 60 employers, and found that their practices are actually not what you would expect. Most employers are not offering equal leave to their high wage and low wage working people. For example, Starbucks offers 18 weeks of fully paid leave to new moms who work in corporate, but only 6 weeks of leave to the moms who are still delivering babies, who are working in the retail sector. That's 97% of their workforce. Hmm. That's a really common practice. It's also really common to leave out dads and adoptive parents from the leave policies. And so this is something that a federal policy could really address. And it's also something that companies need to address, as it's discriminatory practices in many cases.
It's interesting, the some of those statistics that you were just citing, which leads to this question. To what extent does a lack of paid family leave contribute to the problem of economic inequality, which, you know, you could argue is one of the defining issues of our time or one of the defining challenges? I mean, I learned from Aparna, 14% of workers have, only 14% of workers have access to paid family leave. So if that benefit tends to go to only the higher paid workers, this suggests the issue is helping to drive economic inequality in a big way, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And in fact, only 6% of people in low wage jobs have paid family leave. Hmm. So people who are in middle incomes are much more likely to have family leave than low wage workers, and it goes up from there. This is absolutely a fundamental piece of inequality in this country. And when you think about the problems that we're trying to solve with leave, which are about giving children a start, the right start with their parents, you can see that kind of inequality doesn't really get at the core values that we have as a country.
Danielle Paquette, I want to leave the final comment to you as someone who's been covering this issue for a while and will continue to cover it. What do you think what's your prediction? I mean, are we moving toward a federal policy finally on this, or how do you see this going forward?
Well, one thing Ivanka Trump and the White House has achieved is more bipartisan discussion on the Hill than possibly ever before. You know, they took this and they made this such a mainstream discussion, which just wasn't happening with Republicans, at least. Whether or not it'll actually happen depends on getting more lawmakers on board. A government program like that would need congressional approval. But until then, there has been some momentum with the states. We just have to wait and see.
All right. That's Danielle Paquette. She's the economic policy reporter for the Washington Post. Danielle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Katie Bethel, founder and executive director of the organization PLUS, or Paid Leave for the United States. Katie, thank you as well.
Thank you.
We also had Aparna Mathur, scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Aparna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. You can follow me at Twitter at Anthony G. Brooks. I'm Anthony Brooks, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.